Funding for Think comes from SMU Continuing and Professional Education.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. Where is the intersection between art, athleticism, and entertainment in a modern-day circus? And what does it take to astonish audiences accustomed to special effects in movies and TV? The Cirque du Soleil production of Cousa will celebrate its 2,000th performance next month when it sets up its big top for a 2.5-week run under Reunion Tower in Dallas. The show's 53 artists hail from 5 continents and 17 countries and perform feats that seem truly impossible throughout a loosely structured storyline of a jack-in-the-box come to life to order up some remarkable experiences for a lonely childlike clown. Michael G. Smith is artistic director of the Cirque du Soleil production Cousa. Jason Barrett plays the role of Trickster. The show opens September 19th, and we are delighted to have you both here. Welcome to Think.
Thank you.
Thank you, and thank you for doing your homework.
Absolutely.
You certainly know where you're at with that.
Well, I want to talk about this, Michael, because the story is always so important in Cirque du Soleil productions, and I want to know why that matters so much in terms of the artistic vision to sort of bring everything together in something that feels cohesive rather than act after act.
Well, it's to make that cohesion. We don't have a narrative as such, though. It's not like a musical comedy. That's where the difference is. Mm-hmm. The story is important to us as the artists, as the creative artists performing it, because it helps us to find a truth, and it creates an honest emotion, which then, by extension, brings the audience into our universe. It's, you know, the most important thing is that the audience enter into our universe and their individual experience has a value. The difference between traditional circus and what we do, that intro you did was great, by the way.
Thank you.
I haven't heard it expressed like that, but it's absolutely true. It's not just fear and wonder. It's the emotional journey of the audience is what separates us from everybody else. And what we take very seriously in making the whole package of what somebody's evening will be.
Mm-hmm. It must be that this is the only show where you don't have to worry that people are pulling out their phones and texting their friends, right? I mean, all eyes are on you guys.
Yeah, no, it's you just look out into the audience, because for me, I'm very focused, but I see the audience and I see their eyes. I see all of their eyes. You know, they're always so focused on what we're doing on stage and smiling. So it's a really nice experience. It's not, you know, going to a comedy show and maybe getting a little bored and pulling out your phone and, you know, it's...
Well, I don't think we give the audience a chance to be passive.
Yeah. Mm.
I don't think that's why they come, but even if they do come and they're feeling that, I don't think that's an option because it's so raw. You have to kind of commit to it and you have to be part of it. Particularly with Cousa, we break the fourth curtain. So there's a lot of interaction with the audience. Mm-hmm. The artists come into the audience. We use the whole big top as a performance space as opposed to just keeping it on the stage. So it involves everybody.
I just actually heard some actors talking about this yesterday, that feels like as much, you know, it's as stressful for the actors to go out there and take that risk of trying to engage someone as it is for the people who think, come here or don't come here, please don't look at me.
I think it's incredibly stressful for all concerned. as an audience member,
that sort of heightens the
yes.
excitement.
I absolutely dread somebody coming to do something to me. But I think for the artist, leaving the stage, coming to the audience, very stressful too, that they find the right person, the person reacts well, and they're much more vulnerable. You know, when you're on a stage as an artist, you have an invisible curtain that is like the Berlin Wall. You're mm-hmm. safe. You know, nobody can touch you. You come through that, then you expose yourself very much so.
And it does seem that way there's also even, I mean, as human beings, we would empathize with someone in danger and if there's a sense that something's going to go wrong. But it's different. It doesn't feel as safe. We're not sure as an audience that everything's going to be fine if we're really part of this whole thing.
Well, yeah, that's the difference between live entertainment and watching a DVD. Mm-hmm. You know, in a competitive market for the entertainment dollar at this point, there's so much out there. What I think live entertainment has that nothing else has is that exactly that risk value. Mm-hmm. It's a live show. It could go wrong at any moment. For the artists as well. I mean, you know more about that, Jason, because you're backstage more. We're all very conscious of that, particularly because what we do is very dangerous.
Mm-hmm. Jason, talk a little bit about your character. And you're there throughout the show at key moments, and you have this sort of magical power.
Yeah. My character is called the Trickster. And I'm kind of like the Jack in the Box, mm-hmm. as you said at the beginning. And I appear to the innocent character, and I take him on this journey through this kingdom of acrobatics and clowning and zaniness. And it's a really fun character. It's a very powerful character, and it's so fun to play every night. It really is. But you know, the show, the storyline between me and the innocent deals a lot with the
and the innocent is the clown that you meet in the beginning of the
yes,
show.
Yes, yes. Mm-hmm. And the story, it deals a lot with like power and struggle and good and bad and duality. It's a very simple narrative, but it's very clear. It's very nice.
Do you have to feel this? I would imagine it's like any other acting job you've ever done in terms of the importance of focus and really paying attention to the character as opposed to just kind of going through the blocking and getting the tumbling right.
Yeah, every night's different, mm-hmm. you know, especially with this character. This circus is so different from theater.
Yeah,
there's no mark. There's no dialogue. Everything I do is physical acting. And the emotion can change. It doesn't have to be the same thing every night. And I mean, as a performer and as an actor, it's rewarding and it's interesting. It keeps it interesting. But it's really hard to explain.
Yeah. And so the energy, even the relationship, you think, between...
The relationship always stays the same. Uh-huh. But the energy at certain moments can change. And what's so great about Cirque is the show is always evolving a little bit. So you can find little moments, you know, that work or don't work within the show every night. And sometimes when I play this character, because it's such a unique character to play, I get lost in it. Mm-hmm. And it's very easy to drift in one emotion.
So how does that evolution work for you, Michael, as director? I mean, do you go away from the production for, a city or a few weeks and come back and think, well, that is different than the last time I left it?
No, I don't. I stay with the show.
But you do?
I'm actually pretty new to the show. I came just at the end of the Japanese tour back in March. Mm-hmm. But I think my job is to keep all that alive. What the process that Jason was talking about is very much part of the whole process for everybody. If we were to recast the Trickster, we would look for somebody who can physically do what he has to do in terms of choreography and acrobatics. But the essence of the character would stay the same, but that's it. Mm-hmm. All the different layers that we would build of the character and the interrelationship with the other characters, particularly the innocent, that could all be new. So by doing that, it has a cathartic effect on the whole show, because every time he interacts with somebody else, it's different. So the other person has to react differently if they're doing their job right and listening as an actor should. It's not always the case when you do 8 shows a week, I'll be honest. But I mean, I think a big part of my job is to make sure that that does happen, that there's an awareness at every single show that it is a live show in performance. And that if they're not connected to it and it starts becoming automatic pilot, we take away a lot of the audience's experience. And, you know, that's people come with a high expectation to Cirque du Soleil, and we have to deliver it. So that's why we have a resident artistic director.
I want to talk much more throughout the rest of this hour about the performers who obviously are the heart and soul of this. But I have to say, and I've only seen the show on DVD, and the DVD is fabulous, although I'm sure it doesn't even compare with the live show. But you're not here yet, so I couldn't see it. gosh, the sets, the costumes, the technical elements of this, the lighting cues are really pretty extraordinary. And the show wouldn't be what it is without these other things that I don't think we're supposed to necessarily think much about as an audience, but they really do enhance the entire experience. Mm.
Something's wrong with the balance if we notice those things. We shouldn't notice anything. It should be a flawless connection and balance. You know, achieving that harmony and the balance, yeah, it's something that takes time. When a show comes out of creation in Montreal, the what we call the fixation, I don't know the word in English, happens a year later. Hmm. Nothing gets kind of solidified until a year later. And even when it solidifies, it's still a liquid experience. It's still a work in progress, always. And that's the philosophy of the company.
And can you talk a little bit, Jason, about how other performers, even besides what you're doing, are changing a little bit? I mean, it's not simply the tricks that they're doing. It's everything.
It's everything. You know, for instance, maybe an acrobat is trying to play with their presence or their character mm-hmm. on stage or how they relate to what's happening or even another character, you know, on stage. And the show is always changing. I mean, acrobats are constantly working on something new to perform or show. Different cues and lighting and music come up and they change the atmosphere to make it to just enhance what's happening on stage. It's really beautiful.
By the way, I used the word tricks. Was that the wrong, most insulting possible word
not
I could
all.
Use?
No.
We tend to use the word image just because it sounds better. But yeah, it's a trick.
Mm-hmm. It's a trick.
it's often, you know, because I'm still quite new, it's very nice here when the artists come and say, I've got it, because to put a new image into the show, I have to approve it.
Sure.
But they come to and it comes from their own volition.
Mm-hmm.
I have to say that a lot of my job is not saying, come on, guys, come on, you've got to get it together. I don't have to do that. I think there's tremendous pride from everybody that takes us through that.
Is there sort of a temperament? You have to have people, you're only going to cast people in this show who are constantly driven to do something bigger, better, faster, more.
Well, I think that, you know, we recruit a lot of people from the world of sport and elite athletes. They come with a drive, and as we just saw in the Olympics, because they've just been on, so we're going to having a field day.
Now, you guys watch the Olympics and go, yeah, big deal.
Oh, no.
I can do that with my eyes closed.
Love it. Love it, love it, love it, and find it incredibly inspiring.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, when people come with that kind of discipline, they compete with themselves. Mm. The difference of the ambiance in, for example, the dressing room, when you work in theatre, people compete with each other. And, you know, you get the stereotypical bitchy comments in the dressing room, nah, 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 all that kind of stuff. We have a lot less of that, certainly from my perspective. I don't know about yours, Jason, you're in the dressing room. But because the world they come from, they compete with themselves, we have a lot less of that.
Mm.
And I find it much healthier. Much healthier.
Do you want to comment on your experience of that?
You know, I very much compete with myself every night.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm always judging myself. I'm a bit of a perfectionist, and much of my challenge is trying to let go of all of that. I'll let go of all of that that inside voice telling you can't.
Yeah.
You know, always, or oh, that didn't look right. But you know, it's for me, it's all competition with myself, and everybody's pretty individual in the cast, and what they do, you can't really compete with each other. You know, I actually feel like our cast is more like a family. We're very close and supportive. Mm. So it is a very unique environment.
What's the common language? Is it French? Is it English? Is it
English?
English. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Officially, mm-hmm. Our official common language is English.
And does everybody pick up a little of about 10 other languages after a year or two?
I mean, I can say bad words in every in maybe like 16 languages.
Well, the FCC will thank you for holding off.
I will.
We're talking this hour with Jason Baron and Michael G. Smith. Both are with Cirque du Soleil's production of Cusa, which will open September 19th in Dallas under the big top set up beneath Reunion Tower. We'll come back to the conversation in a moment. If you'd like to join us, you can call 1-800-933-5372 or send email to think@kera.org.
Funding for Think comes from SMU Continuing and Professional Education. Classes are available in everything from fine arts to personal finance. Fall registration is now open. You can learn more at smu.edu/CAPE.
You're listening to Thank Gone, KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. Cirque du Soleil's production Cusa will open September 19th in Dallas under the Big Top, set up beneath Reunion Tower. We're talking now with two people from the show. Jason Barrett plays the trickster, and Michael J. Smith is artistic director. If you'd like to join us, call 1-800-933-5372 or send email to think@kera.org. Is there a particular culture within the company? Do the sort of acrobats hang out together and the dancers hang out together, or are people pretty mixed and make close friendships across the disciplines?
Specifically on this show, we have a lot of families. Mm-hmm. So we have our friends, we have our people that we hang out with, yeah. But everybody goes home to their families. We just have a lot of families on this show. Mm. So it's a pretty quiet show.
We travel with a school. Mm-hmm. If we contract an artist and they have children, then we educate them. They're educated in the Quebec system because we're a company from Montreal. But for a lot of the Russian speakers, when it comes time for contracts, the kids negotiate for them because they speak English.
That makes sense. They're translating the whole thing. Yeah,
but it's great. So they get educated in English and in French, mm-hmm. and of course they grow up with their own mother language as well. So, and they have the experience of being on tour with a circus. For the kids, I think it's a fantastic experience.
When you're traveling with a show like this, and I was reading on the website that the contracts are usually a year or 2 years for most people, how does your notion of what is home change?
Do you want to?
I think it's up to the individual. Mm-hmm. For me, I live in Paris, and my home is in Paris. I'm out on the road, and I stay in hotels and apartments. Home becomes the site where we work. Mm-hmm. The Big Top always stays the same. The dressing rooms are the same. The warm-up area, backstage, all that is the same. That becomes the constant. And it becomes the stability psychologically as well. Everybody deals with it differently. Without Skype, I think that we'd all be suffering greatly.
Forget what people look like.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I mean, it's that. We have the chance to live a dream in the sense that we ran away to the circus, et cetera, but you know, there's a lot of glamour to that, but there's also a lot of sacrifice. It's a lot of hard work.
Yeah.
Not being around family and friends at important times in their lives and in your life. So it really is a juggling match, and I think everybody handles it as best they can, and how long somebody stays doing it is very much dependent on how they manage their personal life.
Mm-hmm. And it's up to 310 performances per year, is that right?
We can do a minimum of 300.
Wow, that's amazing. Mm. That's not even a lot of time off to go do other things.
No, we have a week off between cities, mm-hmm. Because it takes them 9 days to get the tent down and up.
Yeah,
we obviously don't do that in the artistic department. we swan in when they've got rid of all the hard hats and the vests and things. And then we get 2 weeks off a year when the show closes for 2 weeks a year. So, no, it's a big commitment. It's a lifestyle choice as opposed to just doing a job. Mm-hmm. Because the highs we also get is seeing 2,500 people every night on their feet, knowing that we have had the ability to touch them. You know, we're dream makers. I think that I really do feel that we're living a dream. And if we can spread some joy to some of the people that come, and it's about hope. It's about looking at people achieving the impossible on the stage translates to somebody in the audience, maybe an obstacle in their life that they didn't think they could get over. It gives them the hope that, yes, they can achieve the impossible as well. And, you know, that's got to be a good thing. We're spreading good things. So that's the compensation, and that's the joy that we get from doing what we do.
It almost seems like there's a magnified sense of how amazing these things are because everything else in our life is mediated in some way, and there's special effects, and there are sort of instantaneous technologies, and the sort of human element of seeing people performing these things that you know there can't be any tricks to them. there's something maybe more special about that now in 2012 than there was, you look about 20, but, 50 years ago.
No, definitely. I mean, in our show, again, specifically, it's actually very we've kind of gone back a little bit. It's very easy gimmicks we do. You know, it's not, they're not very technical. It's really the performance that is.
It's all about the human performance. Yeah. And I that's why the show's so great.
And it is so great. Even off stage, you know, the technicians and stuff we work with and our stage manager, I mean, when I'm doing magic all over the stage, someone else is doing it and I'm relying on their timing and their, you know, their talents to make it look as special as it looks. You know,
in the chronology of the shows that were created at Cirque du Soleil from back in 1984 to 2007 when Cuza came out, the shows were getting bigger and bigger, more technical things, more automation, more new age technology that is making stages transform, all those kind of things. Cuza was the mandate from our creator Guy Laliberté was really to go back to basics in the sense that. It's not a cheap production by any standards, not in the least. But the real impact of the show is the human performance. There's not a lot. There's no moving stages. There's some flying things coming in, but it's why wire. The flying itself is done by a person. Mm-hmm. Everything is about the impact of the actual individual performance, and I think that's why it's so exciting to watch.
Does there come a point where, no matter how remarkable the individuals you're working with are, that you sort of look up at a particular act and think, of course, this always goes really well? Or is there always that sense, even for you two, of suspense? I mean, I wonder how you would manage the stress of worrying every single night it's going to go on okay with the need to still be excited by it.
Well, it just happened the other night, because usually things go really well all the time, you know, and then all of a sudden, you know, someone gets stuck or something gets stuck, and you're like, we don't know what to do. Like, you know, we're all confused. Like, this doesn't happen.
So what happened?
But it does. Well, it was actually just a technical error, and mm-hmm. something got stuck, and the show just, it kept going, because the show must go on. It is right. The circus, so we do keep on going, mm-hmm. no matter what. Mm-hmm. And it played through, but it was very. I was up with the band at the time because I have to make some appearances where they sit up in the set, and we all looked at each other like, "What's going on? We don't know this. We don't know." You know, we are a show of perfectionists, and everybody on our show takes ownership in what they do and is very responsible for their act. So we don't have a lot of that. And I've been on another Cirque production where we had that every night.
Me too.
Is there any part of you that is bothered by the small element of human nature that wants to see something go wrong? I don't think anybody goes and wants to see someone get seriously hurt, but people are sort of waiting because they know you're perfect and they know how good you are. Is that something that bothers you just as an individual or for the sake of your companions who are doing this work?
I certainly haven't thought about that. I'm so focused, and yes, I do get stressed every day mm-hmm. when I watch the show. For two of the big dangerous acts, there's one, the Wheel of Death, and it's called that for a reason. It certainly in Japan, in the 3 weeks I was there, I could not manage to see it all the way through.
Like you had to like turn away?
Yes, because my hands still are dripping mm-hmm. at the end of the act. I think because the audience reaction was different when we got to the States, and it was much more how I wanted to react, because I wanted to scream because I was really scared.
But that's not how the audience reacted in Japan.
No, they reacted differently. Mm-hmm. It's a much more subdued reaction, and not at all how I would react. So the fact that I was surrounded by people who clearly were as freaked out as me made me feel a lot better that I was watching something very dangerous. So I don't think if I'm not watching, I'm fine. If I've got it, if I'm in the office and it's on a monitor and I hear the music, mm-hmm. If I'm in the house, no, I still get nervous. Yeah, I don't want an accident.
Even so, every night, you know, if I do a couple acrobatic tricks, or that I have a big entrance.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
And the entrance, everybody always comments, wow, it's perfect. It's amazing. Yeah, but every day when I'm about to do it, I'm like, don't mess up. You know, you still have that going through your head all the time, no matter how good it is. And I think the audience can see that concentration as well. So they're with us as we're trying to be perfect. Mm-hmm. They're pulling for you. Yeah, yeah, mm-hmm. yeah.
Yeah. Well, you're the only one on stage. You really don't want to screw that one up, do
no.
you?
It's happened once.
And then you again have to just, back your way out of it and find a way back to what you were trying to do?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, but then again, like I said, it's something else takes over. Mm-hmm. And you all of a sudden have that intuition. You all of a sudden know what to do when something goes wrong. And I guess that's just part of experience and the level of professionalism that needs to be to do those crazy things. It's insane.
Well, people, none of the artists can schlep through it. Mm-hmm. I mean, whatever they're doing, there's different degrees of danger, but there's a risk for everybody. And the responsibility you have to a partner, because a lot of the things, people's lives are depending on somebody else.
Yeah.
So I don't think anybody goes into cruise control when it comes to Showtime. They can't afford to. I mean, it's not an option, really.
Now, what about, it sounds like this is a really unified company and people work hard to get along. I mean, is there a point at which work is work and, you know, every 2 weeks there's a staff meeting and people are kind of, I mean, how do you manage the sort of quotidian tensions that emerge between people, even people who care very much about each other but live and work very closely together?
Well, we have to manage it. Unlike Broadway or in theatre in general, where, you know, if you get a difficult cast member, they lose their job, mm-hmm. and you can replace them. You've got 500 people waiting in the street to do that role.
There's not that many people who can do the Wheel of Death.
That's it. You know, the investment that we make as a company, before somebody's even arrived at the show, you know, all the training they do in Montreal, mm-hmm. The fact that all the costumes are made in Montreal, we dye our own fabric, we make our own shoes, everything's hand-done. It's a huge financial investment as well as in terms of energy and time. So when you do get those conflictive situations, I have to manage them. That's part of my job too, and it takes a lot of time. But, you know, the same as any conflict resolution, when you've resolved a conflict, and there's something gratifying in that.
Can you speak to that a little bit, Jason, and the casting process? And did you feel like they were evaluating not only your talent as a performer and as an athlete, but also your temperament?
I definitely think for anybody hiring somebody, if you're easy to work with, it just makes it so much more pleasurable. You know? You don't want to work with the pain in the butt.
Right.
Yes and no. Sometimes we get people that are, you know, a little hard to work with, but they're just amazing.
Yeah.
They're so super talented. You can't take your eyes off them on stage. I mean, it's kind of like a catch. What is that?
It's catch 22.
Yeah.
It's If some. I mean, part of being professional, when we do evaluations of the artist and all employees. When I'm doing it for the artist, it's the 360. I mean, because we live on a tour, because we live in each other's pockets, because we see each other every day. On your day off, you come out of the hotel, you bump into somebody. So we don't get any kind of freedom. So if somebody is a very difficult personality, then, yeah, that would get hit and we probably wouldn't keep them.
Mm-hmm. So, by and large, the show is populated by these very young people who are sort of at the top of their careers physically. Another thing really interesting that I read on the website was that there's a transition program that Cirque provides for people who, for I'm sure a variety of reasons, cannot or will not be doing this kind of work anymore. Can you guys talk about what that is?
There's a cutoff point.
Yeah. Of course.
Yes.
I mean, you only stay young and perfectly physically perfect for so long.
Yeah. The Crossroads program is what's interesting is that it's operated by an independent company. It's not operated by Cirque. Mm-hmm. So it's not to give people another job. It's to educate artists of what their potentials could be in other areas, how they find out about, maybe they have an interest in something, they would find out how they could get much more information, how they could get themselves educated. There's also some money there if it's a simple education, if it's an internet thing that they help them with. So, I mean, yeah, I think it's a great program. But we also ask an awful lot of the artists. So mm-hmm. I think there's a moral fiber in the company, which I really like, about giving back to the artists and giving back to, you know, where we go and visit. We employ local people for setup. We try and orchestrate things, something called, which we call Cirque du Monde, which not so much here because there's not so much poverty. When I was in Brazil, because there's so much poverty in the favelas, the only chance these kids have in life to get out of the drugs or the gangs is circus, because it's something that they can do. So we identified the circus schools in the worst possible areas.
Wow.
And made contact with them, brought the kids to the site, and I never had a problem of volunteers from the artists to do workshops with them all day and then have them for the show that evening, and they stay and have dinner with us, et cetera, et cetera. And we went as a group into the favela, which we wouldn't have been able to do and really see the reality of that had we not had a real connection with real people. Mm-hmm. And it's about giving back.
And so when you see these children, the idea is that they will ultimately perhaps travel with a similar company?
Well, it's to show them that there is an alternative to the gang and the drugs that they are surrounded by mm-hmm. every day. If they keep persevering, if they keep working, it gives them the hope that they could do this as well. Because we actually get a lot of artists in Brazil through that program, which initiates and then they move on to another one, et cetera, et cetera. And we have a lot of casting scouts in Brazil.
My guests this hour are Michael G. Smith, who is artistic director of Cirque du Soleil's production of Cusa, and Jason Barrett, who plays the trickster in that production. It will open September 19th in Dallas for a 2.5-week run under the Big Top, which will be set up beneath Reunion Tower. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can call us at 1-800-933-5372 or send email to think@kera.org.
Funding for Think comes from SMU Continuing and Professional Education. Classes are available in everything from fine arts to personal finance. Fall registration is now open. You can learn more at smu.edu/CAPE.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. We're speaking this hour with Jason Barrett, who plays the trickster in the Cirque du Soleil production of Cusa that will open September 19th in Dallas. Michael G. Smith is with us as well. He's artistic director of the show. If you've got a question, you can ask it at 1-800-933-5372, or you can send email to think@kera.org. It must be, and we were talking about this a little bit in the break earlier, it must be an interesting education on different cultures of the world when you go in and simply notice that people stand up in one city and clap in another and whistle in a third. What do you learn, and what do other performers sort of prepare you for what you might expect?
You have to learn appreciation for the culture and the response that they have. Like when we were in Japan, for instance, it was very, you could take it as cold, but it's not. It's a different way of expressing their appreciation or how they feel. And once you learn not only to accept the cultural difference, but to acknowledge what's actually happening, then it's the same. What's the word? You get the same response. Mm-hmm. You know, it's the same reward.
You have to know how to read it.
You just have to know how to read it. Exactly. Yeah.
It's expressed differently. So, mm-hmm. But we love the audiences in America.
Oh, my gosh. Yes.
We really do.
Is it? I mean, are we just like sloppy and happy with everything you send our way? Or what's your sense of it?
Well, I came to the show in Japan, at the end of the tour in Japan. So the first time I saw Cusa was with a Japanese audience. Mm-hmm. And I wasn't sure that I really, really liked the show. And then we transferred to Phoenix, and my first premiere with the show was in Phoenix. And it totally transformed how I saw the show. We had two standing ovations during the show.
Wow.
And obviously at the end as well, the most incredible audience. And I've never actually worked in the States before, so I've never experienced an American audience. And have been enjoying it ever since. We love them.
And city by city, do you notice, is there more variation from one city to the next than there is, say, from one night to the next?
No. It can get a... I don't know.
I think the nightly thing is just sometimes it just buzzes.
Mm-hmm.
For no apparent reason. It's very esoteric. It's very intangible. You know, sometimes an audience is great. An audience also stimulates itself.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the differences are much more cultural because we travel around the world, going from Japan to the States. We've got two another city after Dallas, and then we're heading to Europe, which again will be a very different experience. With Europe having very big cultural differences, it will be a cultural difference to adjust every city. Because we go from London to Madrid, Madrid to Moscow. So there'll be, for the clowns especially, that's going to be huge adjustments because they have to judge their performance with the audience. The audience become the fourth player for them.
That's very interesting because the clowns don't rely on a lot of language. So, but they still, things don't play in Moscow that will work in Paris.
No, but I think in Kooza they rely on language more than any other show I've worked with, Cirque du Soleil.
Mm-hmm.
But no, the reactions are different. They have to... what we do, we look at the market, we do some cultural studying. Between all of us, we know enough people to have kind of judged how they might react, and it's guesswork at the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
I can't say we get it right first time, not at all.
It's got to be amazing to be able to go all over the world and live. Are most runs the length of the Dallas run, or most of them shorter, a couple weeks?
Depends on the market. In Japan, we would run for, 3 months a city.
Wow. So long enough to get to know the place.
Yes.
Yeah. That's really nice.
Yeah.
It's really nice.
But they have to be big cities and strong markets. Normally, anything between 6 to 10 weeks is more the average, I think.
Mm-hmm. So you set up, are you living in hotels typically, or do they have apartments in most cities?
Mm-hmm. Where they can get apartments, because people prefer that to give a semblance that we actually have a life.
Mm-hmm. And in terms of packing, does everybody have a limited, like you get two big suitcases and...
Well, I know, you know, there are some people on tour who have way too many suitcases.
Some people, in order to... create a home, they have a suitcase just full of stuff which they put in their hotel room.
Picture
frames? Down to curtains and cushions and favorite pillows. You know, some people travel with 8 suitcases. So mm-hmm. we have a truck that leaves the day before we do, and you have to bring your luggage down in the morning and then you pick it up in the next city.
Mm-hmm. So are you traveling on buses in most places you're going, or trains, planes?
Flights.
Mm-hmm.
Normally.
So you don't have to travel necessarily together?
No.
No.
Mm-hmm. Is it nice to get a little break in between? And?
Oh, yes.
Yes.
Well, it's interesting. You know, your coworkers become your neighbors, and, you know, that after a while, I can see where you'd need a break.
Well, yeah. And you know, as the artistic director, I look forward to everybody having a break and coming back and setting a tone, setting a agenda of what are our challenges this city? What can we achieve? And because you kind of ride on the wave of a new energy because everybody's just had a week off.
Mm-hmm. Is there superstition about injuries or the avoidance thereof?
I don't know about superstition. I know that I'm not an extremely religious person, but I do say a little prayer before the show. Because I just don't want anything to happen.
It certainly couldn't hurt.
If you warm up and prepare yourself, the risk of injury is pretty minimal.
Yeah.
But, you know, if you get into this kind of drag of, I don't really want to be here today, you know, that's when you risk getting hurt. Mm-hmm. And that's part of our job, is to prepare for that and be ready and have our bodies strong enough to handle what, more so the acrobats are about to do. So
Is there, obviously you both serve very different functions, but is there a point in this show where you both think, okay, my hard work is done. Now I can really enjoy, I can relax throughout the rest of the performance.
Final curtain.
Yeah.
I'm on stage most of the show and I can't drop my character one at all.
Final curtain. That's not true actually, because I usually, if I'm watching the show, I've then run back because I've got loads of notes. So yeah.
So how does that work? As soon as everything's over, do you meet the next day right before the performance and give your notes?
Well, we can do. That's one way of doing it. I don't like doing that. I think that notes are a one-on-one thing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's about, you know, to establish trust and with the artist. I think everyone is an individual. So unless it's a general note, I wouldn't do that. No, I'll find people in the dressing room or where they're warming up or whatever, because I'm always around. So, yeah.
Are you able, Jason, when you're performing the show, are you able to see, you said you could see people's faces a little bit. I wonder about the reaction from children who look at all this. And, you know, at that point at which you don't think any of it's impossible for a normal mortal human being. And you think, I can do this. I mean, do you see that fire being lit?
I do, but I also see honesty. Because children are honest. So you can tell what works and what doesn't work. Because you can tell by their face. If they're smiling, you know it works.
Mm-hmm.
I get that from like teenagers.
Mm-hmm.
When I watch them and I watch them watch the show, there's a different thought process happening there.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, I don't think it's about trying to figure out the show, or that they seem inspired. And it's really nice. You know, there are some days you just don't want to do the show.
Yeah.
But you get on stage and you see this and you get the reaction from the audience, and all your energy just comes from nowhere.
We do a matinee on a Sunday at 1 o'clock, and it's one of the shows that no matter what's going on and what I've got to do, I always go and see. And I always hope that I have kids sitting behind me.
Mm-hmm.
I love to hear the reaction.
Mm-hmm.
And I love the fact that we do family entertainment still, because nobody's doing it anymore, because it's much harder to do. It's much harder to find a line where, you know, Disney do kids entertainment, adults can go along. We're not doing that. We're not trying to do that. I've had a career in this industry because my mom loved theatre and took me to theatre as a kid, and we had lots of family outings to the theatre. And I love the fact that we provide an opportunity for people to do that, because it's not the same as when I was a kid. There's less things you can go to as a family.
What's your understanding of what talent is? The extent to which it is a lot of dedication and hard work, and the extent to which there is something indefinable that cannot be measured by any metric we've invented so far. You know what I mean? Because I think people look at you and they think you're brilliant and you were born with that, and you think, well, I've been working for X number of years to be able to do these things.
Yeah. And there are obviously certain people that you need in certain places, you know, within the show or within any job, really, where that person was definitely more organized and from birth just really organized and able to manage certain things better than the other person. But that's a hard one.
The X factor, charisma, presence, you know, the indefinable, whatever you want to call it. Yeah, I think that's a talent that's mm-hmm. given. I think it's very hard to learn charisma. But, you know, that I think ultimately it's a small part of the package.
Hmm.
Because if somebody is not, if they physically can't do what they need to do, then it's not going to work. And psychologically and emotionally, I think, is the biggest challenge. That's not a challenge. That's commitment and hard work. Are you willing to commit? Are you willing to see something through? Are you willing to go through the problems that you're going to encounter? Not just the physical pain, but the psychological trauma of doing it again and again and again and falling flat on your face.
Mm-hmm.
And the coach, especially if they're Russian, not being very nice about it. Because they didn't graduate from the Wendy Ward School of Charm. You get niet or da. So I think, but there is an indefinable quality to certain people. that they walk on a stage and you're just drawn to them.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, they find the truth, they find the honesty, but it's just a bit more than that. And I think it's something that's very difficult to teach somebody.
You said earlier, Michael, that this is different from directing theater. Can you talk about how you found your way into directing a Cirque du Soleil production?
Quite by accident. I applied online to www.cirquedusoleil.
Really?
I did, and yeah.
I saw that on the website and I thought, well, that's for, you know, people who have no chance or...
No. I was working on something else, the project fell through, as it sometimes does in theatre, mm-hmm. and somebody I was working with said, you should apply on Cirque du Soleil, and I thought, well, why? He said, just take half an hour to fill in the application. So I did, and within 6 weeks... Three very, very long interviews later, mm-hmm. I was in Zurich and working on a show as an artistic director. I think the difference is because prior to coming to Cirque du Soleil, I also directed a lot of my own work. And with success, I actually didn't like the success because with the success came the expectation that the next thing you do is going to be the next best thing.
Mm-hmm.
What started out as great fun suddenly became really frightening with the pressure that came with it.
Yeah.
So coming to Cirque was a different way of working, using your experience as a director, but the fact that it's not a narrative, you've really got nothing to go on.
Mm-hmm.
With a musical or a piece of theatre, you have a script, you have the book, there's many, many indicators to tell you how to direct the actor.
Yeah. Well, even the timing or how long things should last.
Exactly. You know, you have a lot of stuff's done for you. You just have to be smart enough to integrate it all. With Cirque, you have to assimilate the values and priorities of the company and then look to your own talents, to your own knowledge, to your skills, to your expertise, and assimilate that into the Cirque du Soleil model.
Mm-hmm.
That's where I think a lot of people have challenges. I love the vagueness of it. I love the openness of it. Nobody actually comes to tell you what to do. You have to interpret the job as you see best.
Mm-hmm.
That freedom, I think, is wonderful. And you don't get that freedom in theater. You don't.
My guests this hour have been Michael G. Smith, who is artistic director of Cirque du Soleil's production Cousa. Jason Barrett has been here as well. He plays the trickster in Cousa. The show will open in Dallas on September 19th under the big top that will be set up beneath Reunion Tower. Guys, it's been great to have you both. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
You're very welcome.
Today's show was engineered by Shelley Canavy. Joe Bellotti answers the phones. Christine McConnell produces the podcast. Jeff Whittington is senior producer. You can learn more about the show, find out about upcoming programs, and download the daily podcast every day. It's free at kera.org/think. Comments, questions, and suggestions can be emailed to think@kera.org. Once again, I'm Chris Boyd. Thanks for listening and have a great day.